Welcome to Advantage Over, the podcast for the rugby referee community, or simply those in rugby who want to know more about refereeing. Your host today is Keith Lewis. Are you ready? Time on. Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Advantage Over podcast. I hope the year has started off well for you wherever you are. There's so much rugby on, isn't there? And from a refereeing perspective, there's loads of stuff to talk about and be talking about as well. I've had some really great feedback on my last chat with Tash Ganley, who has now relocated from New Zealand to a very damp and very cold southwest of England for a few months. She made her PWR debut last weekend and will be a regular name on the list, I'm sure, for a while, even if you're scouring the wrong bit of the list looking to see what she is up to. But keep an eye on her progress while she's in the PWR and in England over the next couple of months. I think it's a really beneficial part of the exchange program that we have all around the world. And even this week, I've seen two referees, Lucas and Amber, from Wales in Hong Kong, China, enjoying the experience out there as part of an exchange program there. So there's plenty of that goes on. I know some of you listeners will have been on exchange around the country that you're in, and some of you will have done that on a even further flung basis. So it's great that those opportunities are there for us all to take part in wherever we happen to be in the world. So yeah, look, I've had a really busy start to 2026. Loads of age grade refereeing, which is always great fun. A whole bunch of work stuff, as you can imagine, at the start of the year. The other stuff that's kind of been occupying time is we've been doing some stuff on referee recruitment around my county and where I am. And we held a recent beginner's course at my club recently. And it's given me actually a whole host of ideas for podcast episodes in the future, especially around the kind of like getting going as a referee. I guess there'll be more to come on that in the next couple of episodes, I think, and I hope. But if you're a new referee listening to this, who's just perhaps done a course or is just starting out, I'd love to hear from you and know what you want to cover here. We could do all sorts of stuff. So please do get in touch and let me know. But for now, I kind of want to shift focus away from new referees to someone who's about to crash through another glass ceiling in the refereeing world. This coming weekend, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this in the first couple of days, it's live on Saturday, the 14th of February. Holly Davidson will become the first female to referee a men's Six Nations match. It'll be a great day out for her. Others have been involved in different roles before as an assistant and as TMO, but this is the first time a female being in the middle. Ireland will host Italy, and I'm sure it'll be a great weekend. I know we've all seen the appointments and we've seen the highlights, we've seen the World Cups that she's been involved in, but what do we actually know about Holly? Well, we're about to find out a little bit more, or even a lot more. Before her last big match in November in the Autumn Nations series, Holly sat down with Laura Jane Jones, from who does lots of broadcasting stuff, but this was for a piece that went out on TNT Sport. They did a kind of quite lengthy sit-down session talking about all manner of things. And in order to keep sort of Holly's media interviews down and manageable, TNT and LJ and World Rugby and Holly used what they wanted, but then they made the raw footage and the raw rushes that they call it and the audio available to other media outlets. I saw a few minutes of that footage and that interview at the time, which was great. But as a different media outlet, I listened to the full session last week and there was so much gold in there. I thought it would be great to bring that to your earbuds here. I'm really grateful for TNT and for LJ for allowing me to do that. I've spoken to them both, and obviously to Holly to make sure she's comfortable with that, and for TNT for allowing us to share the footage. Lauren Jane has done an awful lot of stuff with refereeing in the past. She's a sort of real advocate and a real friend for referees and refereeing, and she used her knowledge and experience and her sort of peer-to-peer element to it to really get some good stuff out of Holly. So this was recorded, the interview between Laura Jane and Holly was recorded just before the Autumn Nations match at the end of November. So we are kind of looking forward, but from a slightly different start point. And the interview was done actually on location in a pottery and art studio in Scotland, which is why the first question that you're about to hear from LJ is a little bit, well, unexpected. But that's the scene setter that you get. From me and for her, I think it's time you heard a little bit less of me, and I'm going to hand you over to Laura Jane Jones, who was chatting to Holly Davidson. Enjoy the podcast.
Holly, why pottery as a release from rugby?
I think it's something completely different. And when you're using your hands, it means that you're not thinking about your phone, you're not thinking about work, you're not thinking about anything apart from the object that's in front of you.
Not thinking about rugby, not thinking about refereeing. But what's the hardest thing about that job? Is it the fitness? Is it the mental side of it? What is it about refereeing that makes it such a tough gig?
I think it's everything. I think it's everything that you just said. I think the toughest thing is probably not refereeing on past experiences, though. Like, you can prep for the fitness and you can prep for the mental side of things. But if you've had a bad experience, it's trying actually probably not to take that into the games that then you're reffing, because every situation will be different. But maybe the scars on your back might sway your decision one way or the other. So it's trying to stay as focused on the 80 minutes that you're a part of, instead of having almost memories come back of past times, past experiences, past decisions.
If you're parking past games, where does confidence come from then?
I genuinely believe confidence comes from stacking game upon game, session upon session. You have to have, my coach will say it, JP will say it, it's time under tension. You have to do it again and again to have the confidence in yourself, confidence in your ability, belief in what you're doing. I genuinely believe that's where confidence comes from.
You got it that Mattel didn't make a rugby referee Barbie.
So there's a ref here. She has a little girl. And Heidi, her name is, Chelsea is the referee. And Chelsea had messaged me and she was like, you're never going to guess what. She was like, Heidi had seen the Barbies come out. And Heidi was like, where's Holly's Barbie? She was like, why? Where's the one with the whistle and the cards? And I was like tearing up. I was like, that is so sweet. Like, it's very, very cute.
Do you think it's different in the women's space that perhaps you will be more of an icon and a role model than male referees will be to young boys, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I think because they see us as part of the sport, I think they see us as, I fundamentally believe that our job is to facilitate a game for 30 players. And in the men's space, because maybe a lot of decisions are looked at through the microscope and the expectation of decision, I think, is slightly different. Whereas in the women's space, the expectation of decision is different and they actually see us as part of that game. We don't really sit on the outside of it like maybe we do in the men's space. We sit fully amongst it. And probably because as well, we're the first generation that have been full time, that we've seen this huge growth in the women's space that I think hopefully young girls and boys look up to say, actually, like, that could also be an avenue that I could stay involved in the game in a professional capacity. I think up until this point, that's not been the case. And I do think that like media has had a part to play in that. Like, I probably am interviewed in a very positive light. And if there's stuff that comes out, there is a positive spin on things. Can I say the same about my male counterparts? Maybe not. So would young boys and girls, if they just saw that all the time, want to put themselves in that environment? I don't think so. Whereas when you do get positive press, I think people then want to be a part of it. So I think we have a duty to show the positive side of our job, to show that, you know, yes, of course it's hard. It's at the top level of any sport, it's going to be difficult. But we are able to like be part of a game that we love in the middle. And not only that, but like we have a team around us as well. Do you know, like the people that you do this journey with become your best friends. You travel the world, you get some insane experiences. And I think sometimes we forget that because it can be tough. It's like, okay, what keeps us in this? It's the drive to get better. It's the challenge. And it's the great times that you have with people that have very, very similar interests.
Women's rugby is constantly trying to evolve and match the men's game. How much can the men's game learn from the fact that in women's rugby, the referee isn't the bad guy?
Yeah, honestly, like I think if we could change anything, it would be that. I think over the past 2-3 years, mostly what comes out post games is refereeing decisions. And I remember even after, you know, World Cup final 23, Peter Steph Dutoit was unbelievable in that final. Unbelievable. And his performance probably wasn't celebrated like it should have been. And I think actually if they're the focal points, they're the things that people are talking about, they're the positivity that we can spread across our game, I think that's better. Make the rugby stars, the athletes, the players, icons in what they do, what they achieve, the tries that they score, the hits that they put in. That's what we should be talking about. I don't think a referee is ever going to get through a game without making a mistake. Similarly to a player, like I saw Clark Laidlaw came out and said, if we can actually accept that refs are going to make mistakes and us as fans don't want everything to be correct, then it means that the TMO isn't getting involved all the time. It means that the game probably has a little bit more flow. It means that we're getting an exciting game, a good spectacle. I think that would be the direction I would like to see our game going.
If you think that you already get a slightly easier go with the press, a more positive light, without putting more pressure on your shoulders, do you think that perhaps you might be the catalyst for change, unconsciously, in terms of the way that referees are talked about?
I don't know, to be honest. I think refs need to be in rooms to have conversations. And I think we're very much moving in the direction where, you know, we now are part of shape of the game at world rugby level. And within domestic competitions, referees have a bit more of a say. And I think when we're in that room, relationships are built, bonds are built. You can have informal conversations that you can't really have in the lead up to a game within those 80 minutes or, you know, the hour and a half before. That's work time, that's focus, it's game on. But the informal times, I think that's really how you break down those barriers to say, we fundamentally want the same thing. We fundamentally want the same thing. How do we all get there together?
I know that you get asked this every time you do an interview, and I know it's rehashing the same story again and again. But you had wanted to be a player. You were on a pathway for that, and an injury meant that you had to come away from that. And that's where officiating first presented itself to you. I won't say you've been lucky, but how thankful are you that you've got to live this life? Because it is special. As much as there are tough times of being a referee, you get to travel the world, be at the biggest games that exist in front of tens of thousands of fans.
Yeah.
How special is this life?
It's honestly, it's class. Like, I really struggled to accept that my playing career was over. And even when I moved into reffing, I was like, oh, you know, like, I still had a want, or I probably still felt like I'd let myself down by not being able to get back into the setup. Whereas now, I probably look back and I'm like a big believer that things happen for a reason. And that shoulder injury has probably been the best thing that's happened to me. Like, would I have continued playing for Scotland? Probably not. Would I probably now be in a 9-to-5 job in an office somewhere? Maybe. Whereas I'm now living like a life that I never expected. And like you said, like, I'm traveling the world, going to the best stadiums, reffing the best games. And I wouldn't have been on this journey if I'd never picked up a whistle and actually thought, you know, I'll give that a go. Like, it has completely changed my life.
Tell me about Holly, the player in Referee Touch then. She's spicy.
No. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
No. When I play, I'm either all in or all out. So depending what mood you get me in the day, sometimes, yeah, full throttle. Others, stand out on the wing.
Who's the most competitive in that referee environment there?
In the women's, it's still Joy Neville. Of course it is. And in the men's, I would say James Dolman.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is full throttle 100% of the time.
In Touch or like in the Broncos?
Both. We had fitness testing last week and I was in the lane next to him. And yeah, trying to keep up with him was a fair feat.
Stay in his slipstream. Did it work out? Is that the worst day as the female in that environment? Because you know, the likelihood is you're going to be the slowest.
Yeah.
How tough is that mentally?
Yeah, it's hard. You have to psych yourself off like in a different way. I have to make it, like, I very much probably see myself as like an individual athlete, that I have to just be competitive with myself and push myself to my absolute limits. Of course, the beast in me that wants to keep up with the guys and be there. And to be fair, like, you know, for the large majority of testing, like, I am, but I just have to focus fully on myself, because if I'm trying to maybe keep up with a James Dolan or a Paul Williams, then it's a bleak outing.
And a vom at the end.
And big old spew.
Your women's rugby career is stacked. Did it feel like starting from zero when you moved over to the men's game?
Yeah, honestly. I think that I've probably forged now a good reputation in the women's space, and like, I love it. But you move across into a completely different environment. People don't know who you are. You don't have the same rapport, the same relationship with both players and coaches. So you're pretty much starting from scratch. So when I came across, yeah, I felt like I had to start really proving myself again, and starting those interactions with players so that they could get to know me, I can get to know them. So hopefully we started on that path.
Painful humility there, and you say you've got a reasonably good reputation in the women's game. You've refereed two Women's Rugby World Cup finals and a Sevens World Cup final, I must add. You've done the biggest things in the game already. When you go into the men's environment, is it easy to get frustrated by the fact that you're not recognised for those things, do you think?
I wouldn't say frustrated is the right word. Like, I think that we've seen how far women's rugby has grown, probably since the New Zealand championship to the championship that we've just seen in England. And so more people are watching it, more people are aware now. So I think that maybe at the start, it was quite unknown because there wasn't the same eyes on the game. But the viewing that we're seeing now across both genders within our sport, I think is fantastic. So girls now that are coming through the women's space, people are aware of them, are aware of what they're achieving, which I think is a fantastic place to be in.
Refereeing is about pressure moments. And if we look at your rugby career and those pressure moments that you've had with the whistle in your hand, there's probably nothing bigger than having to give a red card in a Rugby World Cup. Is that the peak of decision-making? What was that moment like?
It's a strange decision in the sense that you know that it is the biggest decision in a World Cup final. But I probably had no doubt in that moment that that was a red card. And so it actually probably gave me confidence in the fixture. I could then maybe compare that to other times where I felt like I should have given a red card. And that is the hardest decision to deal with and live with, knowing that in a game, in the biggest moments, in the biggest stage, I've probably let myself down by not giving a red card. So I think actually the red cards are the standout red cards should be the easiest decisions you make. For me, it's when they're maybe orange, are they yellow, are they orange, are they kind of red? And when we're caught in that grey space, that's where the hardest part of refereeing is, to get the decision that can be understood by the majority. And I think when I've been in situations that I'm not given that, that's where I need to learn the most out of myself, my process, why I ended up at something, one decision rather than the other.
From grey spaces to All Blacks, this autumn series, you'll be the first woman to take charge of an All Blacks test match. Does the expectation and the publicity around this feel quite strange, considering you are at the peak of your powers? You are an incredibly experienced international referee, and it's just another game.
Yeah, it does, to be honest. When the appointment was announced, we probably didn't expect the traction that it would get. And exactly what you just said, like, I probably enjoy more when I'm able to go out under the radar and do my job. Hopefully in years to come, you know, interviews like this actually won't be a thing, because it becomes the norm that I'm out there doing the same job as my male peers, female peers. Like, we're actually just appointed because we're the best in the business. And people see it. It's natural. It's not anything that jumps off the page as being a bit crazy. So yeah, we were shocked with the traction, but hopefully in the future it just becomes Holly's doing another game.
Holly's doing another game because you're a trailblazer. That's the headline. But there are women who've gone before you who you've got great relationships with. And how important have people like Coxie and Joy Neville and Alhambra, who's, you know, been a boss of yours in world rugby, the work that they did before you, how much did that lay a pathway for you to follow?
It's massive. Do you know, I genuinely fully believe that if those women hadn't gone before, like, I probably wouldn't be here where I am today. And that probably starts here in Scotland. You know, like, we had Barry Hay and Alex Pratt. Like, Alex went to the Olympics already, had forged a path for me to be able to be on the sevens, be successful on the sevens then. And with both Coxie, Amy Barrett, Amy Perrett, Joy and Ali, like, they're probably my generation where they're kicking down doors in their own unions. And then if it's not in their own unions, it's higher up in world rugby to put structures in place for us to be successful, put things around us to facilitate the game to the highest level that we can, which I think is, it doesn't go unnoticed. And probably away from that, like, personally, they have just been huge supporters. Like, I think when you move into spaces, it's competitive, of course it is. But at the end of the day, the culture within our group now, people want the best for everybody. And that doesn't mean that just because I'm getting an opportunity means that someone else isn't. Actually, it means that we're opening doors, and if you're good enough, you will also get said opportunity. So it's not about pitting one against the other. It's like, how do we all grow in this space together?
I think a lot of people would assume that being a referee is quite lonely, and you've talked about the support network you have from those women. Mm. What's it like being the only woman in this refereeing panel at this Autumn Nation series?
Yeah, like, I think you're right. I think it can be lonely. I think you do a lot of travel on your own. After games, maybe some people, excluding to the referee family, don't probably appreciate what you go through. So at times, yeah, it is lonely. But I think that's where, over the last couple of years, I've seen a real shift in the support around us. I think reffing is a tough place. And to be able to trust those around you, to really have your back in the tough moments, makes the prospect of longevity within this career a little bit more exciting. Because I know that the group around me, highs and lows, will be there no matter what. And I've seen that now coming into this panel. Yes, I am the only female in this panel, but I don't see myself as that. I genuinely see myself as one of the refs on this panel. And yeah, I'd be there for them the same way that they'll be there for me.
You're obviously incredibly lucky that you get to work with your husband. I jest, but Sam Grove White and yourself have become an inseparable pair as two of the SRU's referees, and you've got Finn as well. What has the friendship of these men around you meant over the past few years, and how close have you all become?
Oh, it's huge. Do you know, like, I think, yeah, we were in France last season, and I had been reffing in Pau on the Friday evening, and Sam was reffing Toulouse on the Sunday, and a couple of the Bath fans were said, oh, your boyfriend's reffing on this Sunday. I was like, only if they knew.
My dad thought he was your boyfriend. We're in Cardiff.
But I genuinely believe, like, I came into this structure in 2017, and I honestly couldn't have asked for two better guys to do this journey with in Sam and Mike. And Ben Blaine was with us for a few years as well. And, like, they have made this journey something that probably I never anticipated. And Mike was obviously at the top of the game, and he's transitioning into TMOing in the world space, but still referees in the URC. And he is now able to transfer all of that knowledge and experience onto myself and Sam. So we're able to learn from that. And as well, like, we have a lot of fun together, do you know? Like, we socialise outside of work and rugby and have a lot of common interests. So it honestly is great.
Is that the biggest misconception about referees, that you're not very fun?
Yeah,
What's I'm the sure. banter like?
I'm sure the banter is different, but I like, yeah, probably people think that we're just absolute rugby noses, but I think you also have to be at this level. Like, you have to love what you do, but do you know, it's, you have to be in environments that you love and that you thrive. And if you enjoy what you're doing, I think that that's when you get the best out of people. And I think that's where we are right now in the group that we have.
It is a job. It is a professional status now. What does a week look like for you normally?
Yeah, it's intense. Because the URC travel-wise is very demanding. We're away from home during our domestic season, you know, 2-3 evenings a week. And then when we come back in, we have to do all of our reviews, all of our training. And then we do coaching domestic referees here as well in Scotland. So it's very varied, but it keeps it exciting. And then during periods like this, we'll get together at the Lensbury to do ref camp. And then during the week, you know, we'll be in with Scotland Men to facilitate and help them out in any way that we can.
How tough is it being away from family because of this job?
Oh, it's hard. You miss out on a lot. You have to say no to a lot of things. Friends, you know, I think it probably puts into perspective who your closest mates are, because they're the ones that, even if you've been away for 6 weeks, it's like nothing's changed. Or if you can't go to their wedding or their baby shower, they fully understand. So it is hard, but I think a job like this doesn't last forever. So you have to probably give it your all, and then life will still be there kind of afterwards.
Is it tough that if you're a Scottish athlete, your family can come to Murrayfield and watch you, but as a Scottish referee, you're not going to be refereeing there. You're going to be further afield.
Mm.
Do you wish that you had the opportunity to show nieces, your sisters, your parents those games a bit more?
Yeah, I do. It's probably a catch-22 though. Like, they came to the World Cup final and they loved it. I know that both my mum and dad were so nervous. Like, my dad didn't eat all day. He was like, I think until that final whistle was blown, he was cacking it a bit. So it's probably a different feeling as a family member supporting a referee compared to a player. And also maybe when they're there, they have to listen to fans and spectators really get stuck into us, which I'm probably not sure I'd want my family to listen to that. So as much as I love having them there, at times probably to protect them, it's maybe easier that they're not.
It's not fair that that's par for the course for referees' families. Is it worse in the men's game?
Yeah, it is. Like, you were at the World Cup, you saw it is a different vibe in the women's space. Like, it feels like, you know, the athletes are the ones that are celebrated, and the family vibe around the competition it's infectious. It's very positive. And maybe where the men's space is at, it is far harder. There is more eyes on it. There is more jeopardy. And so I think we probably receive a lot more backlash as referees in the men's space than we do in the women's.
What about trolling? How much have you been a victim of that?
Yeah, a lot. A lot.
Is that something that World Rugby have supported you through?
Oh, massively. They have a partnership now with Signify that track a lot of social media platforms. They pretty much like filter all of my DMs on Instagram, so they don't actually reach me. And if they do get through those filters, there are ways and means to report, ways and means for them then to be sanctioned. And sometimes even I had two cases after I'd done a game in South Africa that were taken to court and prosecuted. So there is now a lot of measures in place for us to feel safe, I suppose.
Do you feel safe? Is it something that you worry about?
It's not something that I worry about right now. So yeah, I do feel safe. And at times, sometimes, like, the imagination that goes into the trolling is quite good. So sometimes, like, I think as refs as well, you know, if you're coming off and maybe you've not had your best game, so you probably expect it a little bit more. And that's probably when the trolling hurts, because you are able to accept that maybe you let the game down, when you know that actually you've had a good game and the decisions you've made are correct, then you can take the trolling in a more lighthearted way, I think.
It's a cliche, but is it that thing if you do get trolled, you kind of feel like, well, I'm my own worst critic anyway. You can't say anything worse than what I'm thinking myself.
Yeah, sometimes though, it's the final nails in the coffin.
We're talking about trolling, we're talking about the negative side, and you have to have a release, and that's kind of why we're here in this pottery studio. I know you feel like you want to be the little humble Holly, but tell me about your art, because Matt Johnson, who works with the World Rugby Refs, has already sung your praises about it to me earlier today. What are you drawn to in art?
I don't think I know, to be honest. I think that I like being able to do something just so separate from my job. And I always find art is funny because when you leave school, it's something that unless you're fantastic at it, you leave it alone. You don't pick it up because if it's rubbish, people are going to judge you. But I think you don't have to be good to be able to enjoy something. And so sometimes like I'll be drawing or I'll be painting and I'll be like, that is rubbish. But I've actually still had maybe an hour where I feel like I've completely released from any like stress or anxiety from work or any worry, and just had a bit of an hour to myself to really do not too much.
Have you encouraged your fellow referees to take up pottery or painting to kind of give them the same release?
No, Sam and I traveled Japan last year, and I would take like a little notebook with me and maybe like doodle some of the places around Japan. And so I asked him, do you want a couple of pages? He was like, absolutely not. He's like, it'll be a stick man. And it was just, no, hellish. So I'm sure everyone has their own way of relaxing from work, but the boys and art is definitely not theirs.
If you had the opportunity to paint a portrait of any rugby player, coach, have that time with them sat in front of you, talk to them, really get to know them and put them on paper, who would you want to do?
Oh, gosh. Who would I want to do?
Past or present?
I'd probably, when I first started like watching rugby, the first like big player that I remember was always like Jason White. Also stalwart for Scotland. And I would love to know just kind of like what it was like when he was there. That probably it felt like a bit of a transition for the Scottish team kind of under him. So yeah, probably him.
I thought you might say Wayne Barnes in his kind of wig and everything like that in his legal sense. So I'm a little bit gutted that you've picked a player. So for Nigel Owens, it's farming post rugby. Do we think we're going to see Holly Davidson with art gallery displays and selling her paintings around the world?
I thought you were going to say, is it art? Is it a farm for me? Like, no, thank you. No farms. Post rugby, I don't know what that looks like yet. I'd love to stay involved in it in some capacity. Whether that's drawing players and referees or that's staying at the top end of the game, I'm not sure.
That's a long way off yet, because on the immediate horizon, despite the fact that it is 24 months away, the headline for World Rugby and the assumption that we all make is that for you, the ambition is to be the first female referee at a men's Rugby World Cup. Mm. What does putting yourself in the frame for that look like over the next couple of years?
Yeah, like that, I think I can shy away from it and say that that's not, but at the end, that is my aim, that is my goal. I want to put it out there and I want to know that I'm going to try everything I can to make it on that plane to 27. And that starts with Wales, New Zealand. It's been the last couple of years, I've been exposed to bigger games and this is the next challenge on that path. So I go out, I do myself proud, I do my best, you know, and in that game, and that hopefully sets me up for selection for Men's Six Nations. So we'll see how the 22nd goes and we'll take it from there.
And I'd always ask an All Blacks player in this situation who's going to be playing at the Principality, arguably the best rugby stadium in the world, with the roof closed in November, pyrotechnics, Welsh fans in full voice, how excited they would be. Why not ask a referee the same thing? What will it mean to walk out onto that pitch with whistle in hand, knowing you're the person in the middle of possibly the most fiery rugby environment there is in the global game?
I know. Like, it honestly, like, it makes me so excited. And it feels full circle because I said previously, the first game when I was contracted that I worked at Murrayfield was 2017 Scotland New Zealand. And the first game that I ever watched as a fan was Scotland Wales. And so now to be on that journey and I'm doing Wales New Zealand at the Principality, like you said, in such a class stadium. And like to hear both, you know, the Welsh anthem and then to like see the Haka is going to be class. And I want to like harness that emotion, that like excitement, not it transpire into like nerves and anxiety, but actually be like, this is amazing. Like when I started this journey, I never, ever thought that I would be walking out in the Principality to referee Wales, New Zealand. So I'm actually super stoked, so excited. So yeah, I can't wait for the next couple of weeks and just get out there.
Well, Holly, best of luck. We wouldn't wish it for our fans at home watching, but for you, I hope it's an unremarkable and pretty boring game.
Thanks very much.
That was the Advantage Over podcast from rugbyreferee.net. I hope you've enjoyed what the content that we brought to you on this episode. So what next? Well, there's a few things I'd love you to do now. Firstly, tell me what you thought. Drop me an email at keith@rugbyreferee.net and it'd be great to hear from you. Secondly, please tell your rugby or your referee pals about this podcast. Do that wherever you happen to hang out, whether it's on the internet or somewhere else. Share the links with your groups or your WhatsApp chats. That would be great. And if you leave a rating on the podcast site where you found this pod, that also helps other people to find us. Finally, come and join us in our rugby referee community we've got over on Facebook. We only let referees and match officials into that space, so you'll be with one of 5,000 or so other referees where you can chat with them, ask questions, seek counsel, get opinions on referee-related stuff. It's a fantastic community. Worked really hard to make that happen. So if you head to refsquad.com, that will bounce you into the right place. And if you've done all that and you appreciate what you've heard so far, you can buy me a coffee at rugbyreferee.net/coffee. Anything I get through that support network helps keeps all the things up and running. Rugbyreferee.net is all about helping you become a better referee. And I hope we've done a little bit of that today. So for now, that is Advantage Over.